I was at a restaurant that is like an amazing restaurant and super respected, and everyone was talking about it, and it's like the greatest restaurant and it's the best restaurant and it's impossible to get a reservation. And it's 2 years from Thursday. We made a reservation pre-pandemic to go now, hoping there'd be no pandemic, you know, post PPE scandal that I went through, you know, just like we planned 4 years ago to, for this reservation. So we sat down and we ordered different types of food. And I grew up in the time, back in my day, we got the food together. Like sushi doesn't count necessarily because you get rolls at a time. But back in my day, my generation, if two people ordered an appetizer, that came at the same time. And if you ordered an entree, that came at the same time. Unless it's family style and it's coming for everybody. And then they've asked you if you've dined with them before and gave you the whole thing. So I got like three different things before Paul got his cheeseburger. I literally got a pasta. I got a starter. I got shishito peppers, like a whole bunch of things. And I felt sort of selfish. Like I felt like I was pleasuring myself in bed before even thinking about Paul. So he got his later. His was really taking a long time. I guess it's a different person doing it. It's a different process. So I said, hey, do you know where his burger is? And I said, things come out when they're ready here. Like, so I don't, okay. You could get your creme brulee dessert when I get my appetizer shrimp cocktail. That's just another thing that we're doing now. So that's, you know, part of Pass Ag Dining in 2021 is, yeah, no, we do things differently here. We do it differently here. Food comes out as we decide or as we're ready, and we don't straw, we sip cup. 2021, ladies and gentlemen. I mean, usually I throw to the audience and I will do that today, but you may come here with a straitjacket and take me away for this ridiculous rant. So it's whatever you want to talk about, whatever you want to say, whatever you think, if you understand what I'm talking about. But I just want to know, A, are straws canceled altogether? And B, is getting food at the same time as the other person you're dining with also canceled? Is that over too? My guest today is my friend Anastasia, founder and CEO of Anastasia Beverly Hills. She runs a true beauty empire. Her story is incredible. She immigrated from Romania and started her business in a small one-room salon. It was above the salon, actually. People would line up and wait 3 hours just in hopes of a cancellation so they could have their eyebrows done by her. Anastasia's commitment to her craft and her business is a true lesson in learning to do one thing better than anyone and growing from there. And she created a category. She basically created the eyebrow category. Anastasia talks to us about being the first major beauty brand to join Instagram and creating an organic relationship with her customers, as well as the moment she told her husband that she didn't leave her family in Romania to settle, and she was committed to her dream. Her passion is amazing. I was a customer of hers and became a friend, and now I can't wait for you to hear about my amazing friend's journey. Nobody listening knows that we've known each other since...
We know each other for...
1,000 years. But literally, yeah. When we were both broke.
Oh, completely.
Were you broke? Like, I was really broke. Were you broke?
I'm not that broke, but I was building the salon. I remember when I opened the salon in on Bedford Drive in 1997. And you came to me. And I wanted to have a little party. You came to me like, you have to let me do your party because I'm so broke. I need money and I need to, we'll have some cookies and some appetizer and drinks, but you need to give me this party. You were not party planner. And there were so many other of my clients that were in the business. I'm like, no, we need to give Bethany the right of first refusal because you needed to build your business. I mean, you were such a hustler.
Stop.
I swear.
Oh my God. But I knew you from the salon that was above Juan salon. Yes, when was that?
Yes, that was in 1992.
It's when I moved to LA. I literally was there from the beginning of your career and vice versa.
You
this
were.
Is crazy.
Yes, you were. Okay. You were the first one and among other people that helped me and supported me. And that's why I love you forever.
I love you forever. You used to. Okay, so we're going to get to everything. But Anastasia, I heard from somebody that she did great eyebrows, but there was not a thing as doing great eyebrows. Like, that wasn't a thing. Now it's a thing. The pencils, the people, this was not a thing. So I was like, wait, I didn't even know that was a thing. Don't forget, I was broke, but my friend Drew used to go there, and Michelle, and I said, okay, I'm going to go. And you used to give me a deal. I don't remember. It probably was like $60 when we started out, and you used to give it to me for less. God only knows. But you would come out and your eyebrows would look different. Like, you wouldn't even have known that you needed to deal with your eyebrows. And she was an eyebrow doctor, like, fill it in, thin it out, let them grow, then we'll do this. I mean, it was a whole thing. So, but you guys, this was literally a small, nothing off, like, four walls and a table. And her, you don't understand what this is. This, I have a success story, but not even close to what we're about to talk about. Like, this is another level. This is another level, even from where I came from to where I am, from where you came from to where you are. We're talking about four walls and a woman, and that's it. Like, so where exactly did you grow up and how did you grow up? What was this? What were the financial circumstances in your house? And what was the attitude towards work and success and paying bills? And like, what you thought success was, if you even thought about it, what was that like?
Well, that's a very good question, because if I look back in my life and my career, I think that my childhood was probably the foundation of what I was able to build. So my grandparents, they were from Macedonia. They, in 1939, they emigrated in Romania because Romanian government promised them that they could go to Romania, buy land, open businesses, buy properties. Romania at that time was like Bucharest, the capital, used to be called the Little Paris. It was a beautiful country, very, very rich. The economy was great. They had natural resources. So they decide to go there. Some of their family in Macedonia went to Chicago, and they decided to move to Romania. So my grandfather from my mother's side was absolutely an incredible man that during my childhood, I think he was a mentor and a man that even today I look back and I think, wow, he left such an incredible impression in my who I am today because of his intelligence, his value of family and life, and his work ethic. So he moved there, and they had a lot of land. They had several properties, and in 1950, beginning of 1950, the communist regime kind of started flourishing, and they were not allowed to have people working the land and for them. So they start, the kids could, because they were the rich family, they were not able to, they were not allowed to go to school. So my mother, they lost the land, to make the story short. They lost homes. They were able to keep only one house. And the kids could not go to school anymore. So my mother, I think she was 16, and she started going to one of her neighbor that was a seamstresser. She started loving doing that, and she learned, and she started making clothes for all the wives that they had, their husbands in the army. So slowly, my mother married my father, and they moved to another city, and they both opened a tailor shop. My mother, I think, was a very ambitious person. She was the one that kind of ran the business. She was an incredible marketer, an incredible businesswoman that not only she worked so many hours, so long hours, and she was so good at it, but I think she was able to promote herself. And we were able to grow up. I mean, I was growing up in a period in Romania in the 70s where it was very difficult to live there. And you couldn't find food. You couldn't have, you know, she was able to make clothes for women. And what I admire her, and I remember being little and telling her, like, Mom, you work so hard. All these clients are like, as a kid, I thought they were annoying. Mm-hmm. Why you work so hard? And she looked at me and she said, I love what I do. And I love to make women feel good, look pretty. She really loved her job. Of course, I couldn't understand, being 12 years old.
Yeah.
It was kind of hard to understand that concept. Unfortunately, my father that year passed away.
Wow.
She came to me and she said, we need to keep this business. You have to help me. I'm like, Mom, I'm 12. I don't know anything about business. Like, no, you are smart. I'm going to teach you and you will help me after school. So I used to do my my homework between sewing machines because she had like 6-7 people working for her. And she used to go to buy fabrics and all those things. And I used to help her overseeing her people. Or if a client will come, like slowly, I used to help her with her clients. Because I was in art school and I was very good at drawing, I used to kind of draw designs for her for her clients. And I think she was the first one without even knowing that she introduced me to the golden ratio, the theory that I learned in art classes, that Leonardo da Vinci studied the human body and how our body is in a great proportion, the golden ratio. And my mother used to tell me like, oh, this client has smaller shoulder and bigger hips. We need to balance her body. So when you design, let's put some shoulder pads and then the hips will not look bigger than the shoulder. So was a whole concept on how to make the client looking her best. And obviously I left Romania in 1989 because we had the beautiful home. We had more than every other people that they were around us. But what I couldn't take it anymore was the freedom. I wanted to be free. And since I was maybe 15, I wanted to come to America. So it was absolutely difficult. Wasn't easy. My husband was ship captain, so he was the only one allowed to leave the country. And he defected the ship in Italy, and we came. He came here, and 3 years later, I came here. So.
And how old were you?
I was 30. Was not an easy. It was difficult, I have to say. When he came here, he called me and he said, look, I think you should go to beauty school because you think, I know how much you want to come to America, but it's not that easy. Don't speak the language and will be very difficult for you to find the job. I still didn't want to believe in it. And I had this fantasy in my head that I want to go to America. Mm-hmm. And I went to beauty school because I was waiting for my passport anyway. I waited 3 years.
You went in Romania to beauty school?
Yes, because I was waiting for my passport.
You get a skill.
Yeah.
Got it. Smart. Okay.
So I went to beauty school there. And in 1989, I came here. I didn't speak the language. And I really realized that it's much more difficult than I thought. 3 months later, I started working in a salon as a facialist. A Romanian lady introduced me to the owner, and I started working there. And I worked there for a year and a half. And I learned so much from those ladies. I really, really, I think was an absolute, I took my job, that job, the first job, as an opportunity and a blessing for me that I was able to learn I was like a sponge. I wanted to know everything those two incredible women were doing, how they.
Well, that's a good lesson for people. Just get in, get on the road. You may not even be on the right road. Just get on, get in the car, turn the keys on and go somewhere and learn something everywhere. No matter where you land, you're going to learn something.
My colleagues used to say, I have to come here from 9 to 6. I will not come 1 hour early, or I will not stay 1 hour late. Me, I was like, whenever you want me, because there were clients that they wanted to come before 9 and stay later. Whenever you want me, I need the money. Please sign me in. Anything you want, ask me. I'm here, or I will be around them cleaning their desk, their station, because not because I had to do that. Well, that wasn't in my job description.
I get it.
To learn. I wanted to know. I wanted to listen how they treat the clients. What I, to me, was a privilege that I was there to learn.
What percentage of people do you think don't really work that hard? Based on all the people you've hired and employed and worked with, what percentage of people do you think really work the way that you and I work? What percentage?
Hard work. It's very hard to say that, because I have some people that work really incredible hard, and I think I'm lucky enough to have a team that is very hardworking, from older ladies to, or men to, youngers. But to me, what I want to say is this: what you do from a very young age, you set yourself for the rest of your life. Everything you want to do, if you think this is your job description and you are not going to do anything else than those five things, 20 years later, you will be exactly the same job.
Exactly.
If you go and get a job and you stretch and you will do 110% more than your job description was, 20 years from now on, you will be way far away from
where
you are today. So it's exactly what you set yourself for success, and it's okay. I don't think everybody needs to be like me and you. I work like a crazy person.
I know.
But I wanted to be where I am today. And it's okay to have a job 9 to 6 and have a balanced life. And it's okay with that. But it's up to you where you want to be.
What do you want now, and why? What makes you do this every day?
So in 2018, I sold a portion of the company because I wanted help with operation. I wanted to be a global company, and I wanted to partner with somebody that has so much more experience in a global expansion.
Who did you sell? TPG. Are you allowed to tell details?
TPG, of course, it's public. So
TPG. TPG, okay.
A wonderful company that will help me to grow to be a global company. That didn't mean that I wanted to sell the company to sit home and do what? I don't know even what I will do.
Well, they wouldn't have bought it if you were going to sit home. Yeah. They would have bought it because they wanted you to.
Exactly.
They needed you anyway.
So now I think it's so much easier for me to work, because I need to focus only on growing the business.
But do they give you control? Because a lot of times when people sell a piece, are you allowed to talk about what percentage you sold and who has control and how that
it's
works?
It's a minority. It's a minority percentage. So obviously I have a lot of control.
Oh, you have a lot of control. You sold a minority percentage. Okay.
Yes.
But was that life-changing monetarily for you? Was that the difference between doing fine and through the
absolutely.
Crazy?
Oh, no question about it. For me, money, I don't do this for money. I like nice things. I'm not going to deny that. I work really hard for everything I've done. But that's not my motivation in life. I don't work because of the money or things.
Nobody's successful on this podcast, and I'm talking about major billionaires, icons. Nobody does it for the money. Nobody. From Sheryl Sandberg to Wolfgang Puck, No, Mark Cuban, mm-hmm. nobody.
It's the passion.
Yeah, 100%.
Is the passion.
That money couldn't drive you this far.
Yes. No, no. If you do it for the money, you do it for the wrong reason.
Right. Okay. So let's get granular now. So you are doing eyebrows impeccably. You have a slow and low cult-like following that's growing. And then yes. I believe, like with Tory Burch, I believe Oprah was a big turning point for you, maybe. But you moved to that other salon, and that was sort of glamorous in Beverly Hills. And that's when I remember makeup coming into the mix. So can you tell us about the trajectory from when I was going up there sure. to the next salon, and then what took off? What happened? Yeah.
So to start from the salon that I worked in 1990 to those ladies, it was called Giovanna Utah. I worked there for a year and a half. And they didn't, I kind of saw that void in the industry and nobody paid attention to eyebrows. And I said, look, I want to do eyebrows. I think it's, I remember my art teacher talking about how important eyebrows are in the drawing, in the art arena. Like he always said, if you want to draw a portrait, then you want to change an emotion, you change the eyebrow shape. He was the one that introduced me to the Leonardo da Vinci theory that he applied in his okay. work. Yes, the golden ratio. And I started going to the library and kind of without even thinking, I started developing this technique on how to shape eyebrow according everybody's bone structure and natural shape. And it started with me because I had pencil thin round eyebrows in the 80s in Romania. That was the fashion. My esthetician at that time was tweezing my eyebrows. It was very normal in Romania to get your eyebrow shaped, but was not a formula that will balance perfectly the face. So the owner didn't want me to do eyebrows, and I decided to rent a little room in a Juan Juan salon. I rented that tiny little rooms and I started building my clientele. Everybody thought I was crazy. And I used to tell my husband, I didn't come. I didn't left my family. I didn't go through so much to come here and just be an esthetician. I want to do a little more because I know my potential. I want to I have a bigger dream. Mm-hmm. And he kind of didn't believe in it, but I didn't care. Seriously, I took my chance. I rented a room at Juan Juan. I worked there from 92 to 94. In 94, I was like my first article in Vogue magazine. In 1994 was like two pages by this incredible writer, Marina Rust, that had an article about Kevin O'Quinn making faces, that beautiful book. And he was regarded as one of the most incredible makeup artists that kind of revolutionized the makeup industry. And he was the one that talked about how important eyebrows is. And a few pages later was this article about Anastasia that is the best kept secret in Hollywood among Hollywood movie stars. So I think that was the first step for me.
Okay.
And in 94 and by 96, it exploded. It went crazy.
I would have
you
to,
remember?
I would go to the other salon. Yeah, you couldn't fit people in, but no matter what, you would take me to that fancy salon and you would put me in front of everybody because I was one of the first. This was like a fancy, fancy salon. You had made it and I would walk in and I was still broke then. I was still broke until 20 years later, but I would still walk in and you would, you know, you had assistants and your daughter was working there.
Oh no, I was booked. I will open my my book only 6 months because I will be booked on for years. And those 6 months, I will work nonstop from 8-9 o'clock in the morning until 9 o'clock at night. And I will be booked every 10 minutes.
But you had to train other people. Otherwise, you couldn't grow.
Train other people, yes. And what happened actually was that if a client will not show up for her appointment, then I will have a waiting list. mm-hmm. of people that they will come and they will wait 3 hours. I felt so bad, but I had two hands. It was nothing I could do.
Right.
But I never, ever, ever to this day forget the people that supported me, celebrities, but everyday women actresses, the beginning, you know, the, how mm-hmm. many, how many. Jennifer Lopez was in 1992. She just was just doing Selena. She was an upcoming actress and so loyal till this day. So Oprah Winfrey in 98, I was on her show. We couldn't stop the phone ringing in the salon, and still loyal till this day. So I am so thankful for all the support that I got from people like you, my clients, my friends. I mean, we were friends. I mean, we used to go out. This is how it was. Everybody was trying to be an actress, to be a businesswoman. We all together, I think I miss those times.
I do too. We're all too serious. Completely agree. We should go out. Let's really make a plan and do something stupid. Just laugh.
Let's go, Michelle and Shannon.
Yes, the craziest girls in the world. Yes, we have to get together. Yes. Let's do that. Let's just get together. The question I have is, how many employees do you have now? But explain to the people listening, so how you did it. So you're in a salon, now you have people working for you, now you've got to manage other people and manage a business. You had the idea for makeup. This is also before makeup was what it is now. This was not all these Instagram influencers and makeup people are famous. People weren't famous.
No.
So this is also something that you
didn't.
Yeah,
exist.
Exactly. The James Charles, all that stuff that you created this too.
You will not open a magazine and read about a hairstylist or a makeup artist.
No, it was like chefs back then. Yeah, chefs were chefs. They weren't famous.
Not that much. Yeah, 94.
Right.
Didn't read. By 90, Allure magazine launched their magazine early 90s. And they were the first one they start talking about beauty. And I remember this was a very pivotal time. I remember they called me in 94 or 93. And they said, we want to write an article about you. Can you ask one of your celebrity client for permission to put her name in the article? Because at that time, people didn't use everything. And I asked her and I said, can I use your name? And you cannot say that you do my bikini wax. And because at that time, you don't read.
Yeah.
You didn't read in magazines all this crazy story.
Okay? I know.
People, and I built my clientele just caring for them. Supporting them and in the same time looking up for them. Their reputation was very important for me. I will never sell a story to, do you remember Star magazines and stuff like that? How they used to come there and can you tell us? Absolutely not. I can't do that. Anyway, so when she told me that I cannot talk about the bikini, I thought, maybe I should focus only on eyebrows. Because eyebrows, everybody will see it. You see your mother, your sister, you could tell everyone. And it's something that a makeup artist will appreciate because it's so much easier to do makeup when the eyebrow is cleaned and shaped. So I start slowly focusing on eyebrows. And I rented the space in Beverly Hills on Bedford Drive. It's still there, the salon, to not talk too much about that. But the landlord didn't even want to rent me the space because he couldn't believe that I would be able to pay for doing eyebrows. I start doing eyebrows more and more. All the other girls used to do facial and body waxing. And after I will wax the eyebrow, I will fill in eyebrow with some Vaseline mixed with eyeshadow and aloe vera. And that was a pomade.
I remember
you
it.
Remember?
It was very satisfying the way you would like wipe. I remember
and
it.
Everyone will go home and they will take a shower and they will come back and say, hey, we want something. Because when I leave your space, my eyebrow looks amazing. But after I take my shower, what I'm going to do?
Oh, it's so funny.
So wow. In 97, I decide to start this product line. I went to Italy and in 1999, I launched the line in Beverly Hills Salon. And I have to say that I used to work there Tuesday through Saturday. Saturday after work, I will take my carry-on and I will go to Nordstrom's because we launched the brand in Nordstrom's.
I remember. And that was around the Oprah era.
Yes.
That was about I remember.
2000. And I used to go and Sunday and Monday, I used to promote around the country, the service and the products. So basically I was working 7 days a week, nonstop.
Wow.
And I was, before I will go to this, to the Nordstrom to do the event, I will be at 6-7 o'clock in the morning doing the local news, TV.
You were hustling.
I was.
You were
hustling,
really? Okay.
Interviews, TV, anything possible. I would, because there was no social media. So this is how I built my,
I get
hotel,
it.
You know,
I get
and,
it.
And, in 2007, we went to Cosmoprof in Las Vegas and Sephora buyers, they stopped by our booth and they loved it. It was kind of empty, the convention center, and we were mobbed by people. So we launched in 2007 in Sephora stores. It was a great success. And then Ulta and then we roll out everything.
Then the rest was history.
Yes.
So it sounds like really this is a marriage of marketing and hard work, but being very specific. You did not come in with 10,000 different things, with gimmicks. You had one thing you did really well. Then there was a demand for the next thing. So you gave them what they wanted, but you basically listened to your audience about what they wanted, which was the brow gel. And then you blew up and then you took it to the next level with the big makeup line. You didn't try to put 50 pounds of shit in a 5-pound bag.
No, I have to mention that when I launched the first time, I launched a full makeup line because nobody, no MAC, no Stila wanted to sell the makeup in.
Oh, you had to do it because the retailer said we can't have one little wand sitting by itself.
Yes.
I experienced that a lot. They need you to have a line. Oh, so they made you sort of do it.
No, they didn't. I wanted to do it for my store.
Right.
And I launched the full makeup line in the 20 doors in Nordstrom. The problem was I didn't know that I had to pay for the makeup artists that are working at the counter. So I kept only eyebrow products because I had the esthetician that they were able to sell and do the service.
Mm-hmm.
That was the deal. And I pulled the makeup. So I lost a lot of money by doing that.
Oh, but that's an interesting lesson.
Yes, very good lesson. It's better to kind of study very well. I didn't know that I need to pay. So I think everybody that gets into any project or anything they want, do your homework. You know, I didn't do my homework.
Do your homework, but you couldn't totally do your homework because if there were 20 different retailers or 20 different circumstances, they all wouldn't necessarily require the same thing. But what I heard that I've experienced too was you could have just jammed it through and then done terribly because it wouldn't be executed properly. So instead of doing something shoddily or average, you said, I'm going to do this one thing because I know I can do it well. And I was asked to be in Whole Foods with these cookies years ago, but I knew I couldn't handle the scale. And I knew that it would crumble and something would go wrong and I'd have a bad reputation. So I too gave up that money just saying, I'd rather be able to do this right and put one foot in front of the other. So that's a good, I was going on HSN and 5 minutes before, like 6 months ago, I pulled launch of a line because it fit wrong. And I just said, I'm not doing something wrong.
You have to always listen to your gut instinct.
Yes.
Because monies are important to run a business, but not every deal will be good for you. So you need to to really know when to say no.
Well, that's protecting your brand, and that's playing chess and not checkers. I remember your daughter working for you, and she was beautiful and like a miniature you, and she had her own sass and her own boyfriends and her own life and her own thing. And so does she still work for you?
Oh, yes. She started working with me at the corporate office, and I wanted to make sure she understands the business. So she spent time in each department just to make sure that she understands that department. So from sales to supply chain to so many to product development to marketing to she spent a lot of time in mastering and understanding every side of the business. And then in 2012, she came to me and she said, "Well, is this app, and I think we should." We should open an account for Anastasia Beverly Hills there. Like, I don't like the Facebook. I'm not a big fan. I don't need to know when everybody goes every day to get their Starbucks coffee. No, it's not for me. It's like, no, mom, this is different. So I said, okay, let's try it. And we post one video on how to do eyebrows with Brow Wiz. And of course, we're like reading the comments.
Right.
So one of the comments was, "Oh my God, I wish I would have this. This looks so amazing. I wish I could get this product." And I said, "Well, send me your address. I will ship it to you." And said, "Well, you can, because I'm in a little village in India or Pakistan. I don't even remember." And it was like an aha moment for me that I thought, wow, this is a reach. I would never be able to reach this woman in so far away. So this is a gold mine.
E-commerce,
and not only Instagram. We start then putting more and more and educating about our products, the consumer. I think we're I know for a fact we're the first beauty brand that had the presence on Instagram. Wow. And it was everything very organic. And I think was easier for us to connect with those people because, as you know, in the salon, you have the customer. You need to find out what they like, what they don't like. So we took that experience, the salon experience, and we put it into the social media.
And it's like your focus group. This is you.
It was a focus group.
So
yes.
What percentage of your business is e-commerce now? Like, and especially in the pandemic, like what, imagine if you didn't.
Well, in the pandemic was only
100%.
Of course. But obviously because we have 2,500 doors in US, our business is more in brick and mortar, because makeup is about touching. You want to see the color. Reorders are much more online. So or you are familiar with this product, you tried it and you want to order. I think I'm really excited and very proud for what we built. And again, with the desire that and this is how I train my daughter. We need to give the best of the best product, the best quality. We need to search. I'm still approving, me and my daughter, we're still approving every batch of the product.
Amazing. And what do you think you gave up as a parent? A lot of mothers feel guilty and trying to divide their time and the balance. And, how did you reconcile that? How did you reconcile that with her when you were telling a story earlier about your mother and you being 12 in between the sewing machines? It's funny because today my daughter and I were going to a bat mitzvah on Saturday. And, you know, she doesn't have crazy dresses and she's not spoiled at all. Like, we do experiences, really. So, today I took her shopping. I went into Bloomingdale's. There was absolutely not one dress there. So I took her to Zara. We found her a dress, but it was on 60th and Lexington. I never go up there. I used to live on 62nd and 1st in a studio apartment. And it was weird to walk into Bloomingdale's. And I said to her, I used to come here. I haven't been to a department store in years. I used to come here. This is where I used to come to get to buy one mascara to get my free makeup done if I ever had to go to an event or later when I had to do press and I was broke. And she said, really, Mama? Because she sees makeup people come in here all the time. People come to do my manicure, pedicure. She's used to just people coming to give me a COVID test. I said, I could not afford to get my makeup done. And then I was like, I remember not being able to afford a taxi or able to really get lunch or go out to dinner. And she was like, Mama, I'm so proud of you. And she says that to me because it's just so crazy to me that I can walk her into Zara and just buy a dress and just, you know, buy any makeup I want, buy any bag I want or get anything. And it was interesting. So I'm asking about you as a mother. You definitely, if you were working 7 days a week, you definitely sacrificed a lot. You brought her into it. So how does all that, how do you reconcile? How do you balance that? What's your answer to that?
Well, that's a good question because the reason I took her to work with me was because I felt so guilty because she always complained. You could never come to school to my play. You work nonstop. You are obsessed with work. You're like, and she started working part-time for me. And then
at what age? I feel like 16 or 15. I remember
16,
she was
15. Yeah. And she started as well, kind of slowly, kind of liking, and she will make extra money, obviously, because I never spoil her with anything. And she kind of, many people are asking me, like, wow, you're so lucky that your daughter wanted to work with you. And I said, you know what? I mastered to not ask her. I let her ask me if she wants to work with me because she wanted money. I never gave her money, extra money. She needed to pay for her apartment. I like, you need to get the job. I'm not paying for you. The only thing I'm going to pay for your car, because I wanted to make sure she has a good car, safe car, your insurance, and you need to eat healthy. I would pay for
it. I remember that. You used to have food delivered to her apartment. I can't believe I remember you said that. That's so crazy.
Yeah.
You would make sure there was good food in her apartment. That's so weird that I remember that. Okay.
Yeah. Because when you are young, if you work out and you are in a good health, you could spend $50 for a pair of jeans and a t-shirt and you look $1 million. Yeah, when you get older, you could spend money on clothes. When you are younger, you just need to eat healthy and work out. So slowly she started working with me and I started giving her project just to make her understand and proud that she started something and she made it successful. And this is what kind of developed, gave her the opportunity to develop this passion, this purpose in life.
She loves it.
Oh, no, my daughter is a workaholic.
What is her title?
So she's president, very well earned. President of Anastasia Beverly Hills.
Unbelievable.
She does creative control, all the videos. We have a studio and she's in charge of all those guys. Creative for all the content that we have for social media and for everything else. And she makes the makeup products. I do the eyebrow products.
So she's working a lot. That sounds crazy.
Yes,
and she has her own family or no?
She has a boyfriend, but no, she doesn't have kids yet.
Okay.
Yeah.
Wow. So how many employees do you have now?
Well, I think now we have around 300, 200 and
That's
something.
Lean.
Because of the pandemic, all the field team couldn't go in the store for a year and a half. So.
And you still love it?
Oh, I love every minute.
Ah, and what's the dream now? What are the goals now? What is the point?
Well, now at this point, we are in the recovery mood, obviously, like everybody else. And when the pandemic started, we wanted to develop, to expand in Asia a lot. And we just launched in Korea and China only cross border because we don't do animal testing. And in China, they just started to accept no animal testing, but it's a very long process. We want to expand globally everywhere with the product line.
So it's obvious that you don't want to get off the ride. You love the ride. This is who you are. This defines you in a way.
Oh, absolutely. My concept, when I hear people asking me like, oh, when are you going to retire? Well, my concept of retirement is working 5-6 days a week, 8 hours a day.
Mm-hmm.
That's a start. The retirement plan.
And what about, how do you find and manage good people? What is your strategy for that? What is your culture? Because it's not easy.
It's not easy, but I think because me and my daughter, we are so involved, we work so hard, so we are so part of this brand that I think people that love to see us so passionate about, I think it's contagious, you know?
So it's inspiring. You're inspiring them.
Everybody wants to be one day Anastasia, and why mm-hmm. not? I think the best way to become somebody that you want is just work for somebody that you could get there, learn what they are doing good, what they are doing wrong.
Loyal and hard work is the whole thing, because recently there was someone who was working in one area and they were with me all the time and on photo shoots, and it just wasn't working. You could tell it wasn't for their personality. You could tell the game was moving too fast and they were getting swallowed up. And so they weren't doing a great job and they were feeling bad about themselves, and we were going to let them go and they were going to quit. And all of a sudden I woke up in the middle of the night and I said, it's just a puzzle piece that's being put in the wrong piece hole. Like, this person is kind and smart and loving and good with people, but not at this pace. Needs to be over here working on their own thing. And it made me realize, it was a big learning experience recently, that if someone's in the right place and in their right lane, they can fly. And so sometimes if someone seems like a good person that's loyal, but they're not working, maybe you need to move them somewhere else.
I agree with you. To me, the same standard. I think hard work, it's always you choose that person much faster and over somebody that is super smart.
Right. Not this person's smart, but I know what you mean. Like, it doesn't have to be a hot shot. You know, it's got to be someone who just is loyal and hard work, because you can teach.
Yes.
Exactly. So what about relationships? What about, can it fit? Can you be tan and thin and wealthy and smart and successful and busy and also be in a successful relationship? Can you manage all that and be a good parent and a good person? Can you manage all this?
I think in my early career, I couldn't manage my personal life because I was working too much and my work was a priority. Obviously, I got a divorce and I was dating, but I never put that person in front of my work. I'm dating right now. I'm happy, but now I know how to balance much better my life. But of course, my work is, even if we go on vacation, I have to do something for my work as well.
So you don't have regrets? Like, people think about how hard they're going to work and how they're going to balance and if they're going to be a mother. You don't have regrets. You always were very clear in your path and your defining
very
yourself.
Clear, very clear. I admire women that are able to do both, be very successful in business and have incredible relationship, family, but I couldn't do it.
I understand. I really understand it. It's got to be something intentional, and it's a discipline, and you have to really work on it and decide, like that puzzle piece, how you could find a person that fits properly into the puzzle piece.
Mm-hmm.
And then finally, what has been, just in your career, this is not in your personal life, although they might be the same, your rose and your thorn, the high point and the low point of your business and your career? Oh, actually, I have another question after that. Sorry.
For the highs, I'm still working on. I'm still not complete yet. One of the highest probably was to be on Oprah show and being so supported by her. Second, I think I was invited at the White House and for a Christmas, for actually a few Christmas parties. And I was under the seal, you know, in the White House. And I asked for a picture. I have to take these pictures because this is
American dream.
American dream.
Amazing. Oh, wow. That's amazing. Okay. And then thorn?
Oh, so many. I think I learn much more from my mistakes than from my successes. But I'm okay. You know what? I think it's okay to do mistakes as long as you don't do them twice. Mm-hmm. And I tell my employees the same. It's like, it's okay to do mistakes. Accept them, put them on the table. We could fix them faster if you tell me at the beginning.
But yes.
Do not keep doing the same mistake.
Well, Ellen said to me, you will keep making the same mistake until you learn the lesson. She said that years ago.
Yeah.
So, and then the last question, because I didn't ask it before, what percentage do you consider yourself lucky and what percentage smart?
You know, the harder I work, the luckiest I get. Mm-hmm. I think I was very, very good on, I'm a very good strategist. Mm-hmm. I understand my business. Before I will do anything, I need to study very well what I'm going to do. I feel like I go for my intuition most of the time, but I think I'm smart and I lucky. I mean, I think you have to be in the right place for the right opportunities, but you need to be prepared to take that opportunity.
Exactly.
Because I am sure there are so many opportunities. If you are not ready, you cannot grab it, mm-hmm. or you are afraid, mm-hmm. or I think has to do with you as a person.
Yeah.
You know, I came here in America and I thought like, oh my God, I could have so many jobs. I could work so many hours. I felt so lucky. Where somebody yes. will think, oh, I don't want to work that much. You know what I mean? So mm-hmm.
Yeah, you wanted it. You take it seriously. It's hard to even say the word luck yes. because to this day you work so hard. You work yes. like you're poor. Yeah, I get it. I really do. I work so hard too. It's a good feeling. Like it can be stressful, but there are days when you're just like, that was a productive day. Like when you feel like mm-hmm. you're just lining them up, you know, and then everybody yeah. get out and you can lay down. It's a great feeling. So hard work when working smart feels very satisfying. When working, yes. like if someone goes to the gym and they don't know what they're doing and they're just sitting there and they're not seeing results, it must be very frustrating. But when you're working smart, it's a very yeah. good, satisfying very. Feeling.
Very.
Wow. Oh my God. Can you even believe I just, this journey together and just checking in with you every couple of years
yes.
is so gratifying. I'm so grateful you've done this. This has been my favorite thing by far of everything I've ever done because it's so connecting. Like I've known you for years, but I don't know half of this.
But how proud I am of you. I remember you were young and struggling. You are a hustler, by the way. Do you remember when you used to sell pashmina?
You're bringing me to tears. Yep, all of it. Yes, anything. Pashminas, cookies. I wanted yeah. it. I wanted it. I didn't know yeah. what it was, but I wanted
it's okay.
it. Yeah,
this is how it is. You have to try different things and see what will end up working for you.
True. You brought me to tears. Yes, it's amazing to check back. And I want us all to get together.
Yes.
It would be really fun. So I'm going to tell you when I'm coming to LA, 1,000%. My assistant's sitting here. Remind
sure.
me that I'm going to make a plan with Anastasia. We're going to have a big fancy dinner yeah. at your house. And I can't wait.
Me too.
Amazing. Thank you,
Thank
Anastasia.
Thank you so much, Bethany. And again,
you deserve it all.
Congratulations. You deserve it well.
Thank you so much.
Bye, sweetheart.
Bye, babe. Oh my God, you know, to talk to someone who really knew you back when and vice versa, it's surreal. We both really did not know what the heck was going to happen. And we really, through sheer force of will and hard work and passion and connecting and just good enough, never being good enough, both of us created a success. She's extraordinary. I mean, it's another level. It's another level. And even her work level is another level than mine. It's just another level. But that was inspiring. That was amazing. And 90% of what we talked about, I didn't know all that. That just shows you how our relationships are somewhat superficial. I know Anastasia and we've spoken about my relationship, her relationship, but you know, when you normally speak to someone getting your eyebrows done, you're not asking them like how you grew up, what was like in your household. It's just weird. So we're just getting such inside information that will give you this whole puzzle to figure out how to create your own success and forge your own path. So that's what I love the most. I'm learning so much with you. I'm listening to these conversations with you. I'm reinforcing the choices I'm making in my life as a business person, as a woman, as a mother. So this is the most great job I've ever had. I'm so thrilled and I'm so glad you're here. And please remember to rate, review, and subscribe. It's helpful. This show is growing. It's just amazing. We're going to launch other shows because of it. So I appreciate you and I hope you're learning as much as I am and enjoying it. Thank you.